Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissett. Jamie has come in with some front page stories as well.
Yeah, did you hear about this spying beluga?
Is this the start of a joke?
No, it's not. It should be really,
right,
though.
He had a whale of a time. No?
No, but did you hear...
The spying beluga. This was mentioned briefly.
Yes.
Now, what is this?
Now, this is a Russian spying beluga.
Oh, we know what they're up to.
Yeah, basically it was found off the coast of an island where quite near to a Russian naval base. And this is a beluga whale with something strapped around the outside of it. And the beluga was rubbing up against the boat, apparently trying to get rid of this thing which was around it,
yeah,
which had a camera attached, a Russian spying beluga.
Someone managed to... Well, first of all, was it definitely the Russians who put this camera on the beluga?
Well, you tell me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. Oddly enough, right, when they do these things, they don't contact me. I mean, I've had a couple of missed calls from Vladimir Putin. That was probably what it was about.
Yeah, that was it.
Ian, I need to run this by you. What do you think of the idea of putting a camera around a beluga whale? I said, well, logistically, it's quite difficult. You need a big old strap, didn't you, first of all?
Yeah.
And how does it not slide off? Because imagine the water...
I
there
know.
Are loads of problems, I think, with this. I don't know how you would... Like, some sort of harness? Whale harness?
It's a bit sad.
Can I have a large, please? I mean, no. But anyway, it's a bit sad.
It's a bit sad. I'm a bit sad for the beluga because the poor thing's rubbing itself against a boat trying to get rid of the harness. So they have to make it quite tight. But yeah, it's fitted with Russian spying equipment. And it was found just off the coast of a Russian naval base.
And a Russian spying equipment is spying on a Russian naval base.
They were probably testing it, weren't they? It sounds like they were testing it. That's what it was, to see how it would, how they could get away with getting it work.
Training it.
Did they train? So they trained a whale. Are whales, you know, can they be trained to do things? Whales, as I understand it.
Have you not seen Free Willy? Of course you can.
Yes, I've seen Free Willy. You must train the whale. This works. Okay.
Yeah, but they've used dolphins in the past, apparently, to track mines. And now they're stepping up with beluga whales.
Right. Do they have fins, beluga whales? Do they have like a fin that you can...
You know the beluga ones with the big old foreheads.
Yeah, I know the beluga whales, but I'm just wondering how... I'm really thinking about how the camera stays on. That's what I'm thinking about.
But for anyone who doesn't understand, it's basically a big brown strap strapped around the back of the beluga whale,
really.
with a spying equipment on top of it. Yeah,
yeah. That's awful, actually. Yeah. It is terrible. Really. But anyway, it's been caught out, has it? It's been caught out.
It's been found by the Norwegian fishermen. Not actually sure
right,
what they did
questioned.
To it.
They've questioned the whale. What are you doing in our waters?
Yeah. Well, actually, on the spying theme, how do you pronounce this? You know, Huawei.
Huawei. You could say Huawei.
Huawei.
Yeah, Huawei. I mean, there is a lot of problems, but I believe it's Huawei.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
America has threatened to stop sharing intelligence with Britain if it allows Huawei to build its 5G network.
Well, this came out. See, this came out. There was a cabinet meeting, wasn't it? It was meant to be secret. And out it came, which it doesn't really augur well, I find.
As it usually is.
I reckon it was the whale who probably got in there, got into the meeting and was filming it in some way. Anyway, the Americans said we're not working because Huawei, this is a private company, but obviously the big companies in China they all have state interference in some way.
Yeah, they have to provide information to the state. They have to basically work with the state.
Right.
So that's why it's a bit of a worry, and that's why the White House aren't happy with the fact that the government are working with Huawei.
Well, they'll work it out, won't they? They'll manage to work out that where there's a will, there's a Huawei. Come on, we can't do any more than that, can we? You're not going to get a better Huawei joke than that.
Love Sport.
Jamie is here with stories from the back pages. Good morning, Jamie.
Hello. Yeah, so it's a huge story on the back pages today about Alex Hales. Yeah. The Mail go big with it. Betrayed is their headline. The Times say it just Hales accuses England of betrayal. So, yeah, that's a statement from Hales' management team who've said basically that he was told, even though he had this drugs ban, that it wouldn't affect his place in the preliminary World Cup squad. And basically what happened is they included him in the squad, and then the story was broken by the papers a few days ago that he was serving a drugs ban, a 21-day drugs ban for his second offence, taking recreational drugs. And that's why he hadn't been playing for Notts this season. Notts said he wasn't playing for personal reasons. It's now come out it was because of this drugs ban. And now the ECB have said, oh dear, now this has come out, right, you're not in the preliminary squad indefinitely. You won't be involved in any of the England teams this summer. So Hales' management team has said, well, he was told that despite the ban, he could still be included. So that is the betrayal, as it were. And that the paper's basically saying no one has come out well out of this. No. Michael Atherton saying that if the ECB did know, then they should have, from the very start, said, well, you can't be included, as soon as he had this drugs ban, rather than just trying to sweep it under the carpet and hoping the media didn't get hold of it. And basically, Alex Hales himself only really has himself to blame because, you know, it's his second offence. I mean, there was talk of him in the West Indies being unfaithful to his partner, and apparently that disrupted the camp a bit. He wasn't criminally charged for the fight he got in Bristol with Ben Stokes, but he was fined for it. And, you know, the dust hasn't really settled on that. So it just seems to be thing after thing with him. And he's 30 years old now. As Atherton says, he's not just out of school. He's 30 years old. No. So he really should know better than to take drugs again.
How much does it disrupt a dressing room, Luther, when you get stuff like this? Does it really disrupt a dressing room?
It does. Because what it does, people look at all the other players and thinking, if he's doing that, what are they doing? And, you know, nobody wants to be under a microscope for the wrong reasons. If you're all in there and you're like Man City, everybody, you're winning and whatever all the time, people look at what you're doing. But if they're looking at you for the wrong reasons, not the sporting reasons, whatever you're doing, whatever sport you're in, then it's uneasy because you think to yourself, and it's all because of him.
So it does cause
divisions within the dressing room, no doubt about it.
But they also all know that they've all got skeletons in the closet.
Well, everybody have, but I think everybody has, but it's the case of what those skeletons are, aren't they? And if it's when it comes to certain things, when it comes to drugs and that kind of stuff, then nobody likes that because it's, for one thing, it's illegal in this country to be involved in that sort of thing and to be doing it as a sportsman when in, especially as a footballer or a cricketer, you know, there's a list of drugs that you all get, right? There's a list of it. Yeah. And you know you can't go there. So for me, I find it very it very poor.
We know he's an idiot for taking them, right? We understand that completely.
But then on top of that, is he not a bigger idiot for believing that the ECB are going to turn a blind eye to it?
Well, that's what they... But the way this story is working out is that that's what it seems was going to happen. And we don't know this, but it seems like they knew.
Yeah.
And they went, look, don't worry about it. It's not going to come out.
And he trusted them.
And that's why he's saying betrayal. I think having headlines like betrayed, it doesn't really tell the full story there. I mean, I understand why he would feel that way or his management team would feel that way.
Yeah, but isn't that him not taking responsibility in the first place?
To a certain extent, I think that's
exactly
true.
It's just that he's done something bad, which he shouldn't be playing in the World Cup for anyway. And the only mistake was the ECB saying, OK, we'll forget about it. And actually now they've said, actually, no, we can't do that. And it looks bad on them because it's come out in the papers and then they've had to backtrack. Well, but actually it's his own fault.
No, true. But it also with the ECB, yes, for the first bit, is definitely his own fault. But the ECB,
they're culpable.
Really ridiculous that they thought they could get away with it. They thought they could basically, it's a second ban for a recreational drug use, and they thought they could, as long as it doesn't come out,
give him 21 days and then slide him back in through the back door.
And he can continue playing. What message does that send out? That basically it's okay to take recreational drugs and you'll get back in the England team.
Yeah, that's
as long as it doesn't, we don't hear about it.
That's absolutely right. And they talk loads the ECB management team about team culture and player behaviour and how they important they see it all. And when they were going to allow him back into the team and hope no one found out about it, makes you wonder how much of that stuff is just purely about PR and how much they really believe it. If that stuff does affect team culture, as Luther, you say, yeah, it does. I mean, from what people say about him, he's not, I mean, he divides opinion amongst the team. I'm wondering if this was a really popular player, I'm not sure how popular exactly he is, but if he was a really popular player, whether it would affect team culture massively to take him out of the team, or actually would it affect team culture if they did
have
that
him there?
Well, yeah, either way, I mean, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know, but the ECB, they are the governing bodies of cricket, and what they need to do in this case, they need to, regardless how popular this person is, if he has broken the rules, and there's quite obvious they had an inclination that that was the case, they should have banned him. Yeah. And they should have banned him and made it very public. So, and then, yes, it serves as an example to everyone else. This is the punishment that's going to happen to you if you cross that line.
And by
that's
the way,
all you need to know. You just need to know where the line is.
By the way, Luther drew a line there just to give us...
It's there.
You did.
There it is.
Here
the
it
line
is.
The line is at the top of the piece of paper there. Just waving it at the video camera. By the way, it also makes you wonder what else they're hiding. Just out of interest.
Yeah.
This is it.
It does. You know? It does, it. Yeah.
And how naive they are as the governing body to think they can get away with it.
Yeah. Nobody comes out well.
No.
This at all. And it's not a great start to the preparations for the World Cup year.
That means we're going to win it.
Series.
That means we're going to win it.
It's not. Although it is better that it's come out now rather than him play in this ODI against Ireland on the 3rd of May.
Yeah.
And potentially play well, and then it come out after that, yeah, once we're closer to the World Cup. At least now we can move on from it. He's not in the team. He wasn't going to be in the starting 11 anyway,
no,
because Johnny Bairstow and Jason Roy are the in-favour, yeah, openers. But he'd have been a good addition to the squad, but it doesn't have as huge impact as if one of those had have been guilty.
This is Love Sport.
Now, yesterday, myself and Paul Mortimer did spend a fair bit of time discussing an incident that happened at Elland Road this weekend. Leeds were playing Aston Villa, and there was quite a bit of controversy. Basically, the Leeds player, sorry, Jonathan Codger, the Aston Villa player, went down. Leeds players stopped briefly. Because the Leeds players stopped briefly, the Aston Villa players stopped briefly, and then Leeds played on again, and Matthias Klitsch scored a goal. And at that point, all hell broke loose, and Bielsa, the Leeds manager, ordered the team to give Aston Villa a goal. And Pontus Janssen,
yeah,
the
centre
Leeds centre-half,
was not happy. Was not happy.
Not at all. His clean sheet bonus has gone. The goalkeeper's clean sheet bonus has gone because basically Bielsa ordered Leeds to give Villa a goal. Well, let's talk about all this now. The former FIFA and Premier League referee Keith Hackett has joined us. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Luther.
Good morning,
nice
Keith.
To speak to you, Keith. So,
good to speak to you.
All right. I basically went through what happened there. It's a reasonable summation,
yeah,
I think, of what went on.
Absolutely.
What are the rules with regard to these sort of injuries?
I think it's very interesting because the referee is advised to stop the game when he sees really a head injury or a serious, perhaps even a break to the leg. But other than that, He keeps the game flowing until the ball goes out of play. Now,
so Stuart Atwell did the right thing, first of all, in terms of just saying, no, you play on.
Yes, he did. But I think he was then given an option because, I personally, when the player stopped,
yeah,
and the Leeds player hesitated, the Villa players reacted by stopping, then at that point, he could have blown the whistle and gone, right, I'll go back and let's have the injury. You'd probably then go to the player and stand over him and say, well, stay down a bit now, mate, because this needs to look a bit more serious than it is.
Right.
To make it look right. But he didn't. He applied what is expected, and that the game carries on, and a goal is scored legitimately, much to the sort of dismay of the Villa players. And then the manager at Leeds United, who of course had got this track record of being a bit of a cheat because of his,
yep,
Spygate,
yep,
sort of things, did a remarkable act of sportsmanship, in my opinion, and that is, let's sort it by allowing Villa to just run through and score. You're absolutely right about the number five, because it looked as though the number five was not going to take that advice and was going to put in a challenge, but at the last minute, he held off.
Yeah. I mean, Keith, I my thing about that is, yes, the time for the whistle to have gone was when both teams just hesitated for that little moment. That's when the whistle should have gone. But then, once the whistle hadn't gone, the players should play on. I mean, the one thing you get taught as a kid, and I still remember it now, play until you hear the whistle. And I hate the fact that if a player goes down, everybody's saying, oh, kick the ball out, kick the ball out. Why? Yeah. I absolutely hate the practice of people doing that. I think you keep playing and let the referee deal with it. Because them couple of seconds, unless it's a head injury, make no difference. Even if the fella has broken his leg, it's not going to make any difference those couple of seconds that it took for the ball to end up in the back of the net. And we make so much of it, in my opinion, that I hate it. And I'm at games and the crowds hate it themselves when teams do that because they want to see the game continue. But if somebody's seriously injured, you either stop it immediately, it happens, or you've got to let it go, in my opinion.
Luther, I agree with you 100%. And in fairness, the Premier League do, because when I was the boss of the referees, we had this debate, and Richard Scudamore took a lead on it as in his usual sort of format and said, right, first of all, I'm not using the multi-ball system because that's been abused. There were times when clubs had ball boys around the perimeter of the pitch, and then when the home team went 1-0 up, all of a sudden they disappeared, or there were fewer of them. And so we recognised that was going to be a problem. And then he sort of took the bull by the horns and said, right, I don't want players to kick the ball out. I want the referee to determine when to stop the ball. He's got sufficient experience and judgment and should do that. And I think, in fairness, that should have been the outcome last night, the other day. The goal should have been allowed. The game should have gone on, despite the fact that Aston Villa were annoyed. I think at the back of my mind is always this problem, if you remember, between, I think it was Arsenal and Sheffield United.
It was, yes.
Yep.
Where a similar offence took place. The referee applied exactly what you and I, Luther, would want the game to continue. And then afterwards, the authorities, I think with both clubs acting the scenario, determined that the game would be replayed. So at least we avoided that. But I take the view, you know, one of the things that I see, Luther, you know, hey, I've been alongside you. I've seen you take some knocks and I've played advantage. You've got up and played on. However, in the modern game, what we're seeing is players going down, feigning injury, and we've got players who are dying on the field, if you like, because they've just been challenged in a robust manner. And that adds to the difficulty of the referees.
Yes, it does. The players don't help the situation at all.
No. Keith, that melee afterwards, I mean, what should a referee do when, you know, when Bamford did that ridiculous down he goes and it didn't look great? And he sort of, sometimes they just stand back, which is sort of what he did. I mean, he was criticised. They should break it up, shouldn't they, really?
Well, I'm one for getting in and trying to party tell because I was reasonably sized. I think the modern view is, we did have an assistant referee once come on the field of play some years ago to sort it out, and that finished his game, and in fact then finished up in hospital because he got knocked with an elbow accidentally. And it gave him some cataract problem. But that's rare. My view is get in and get it sorted. And the very least you do is blast the whistle.
Yeah.
But I sometimes think we've just got a weak approach to it and we let it all go on and it escalates. And I'm thinking, who's in control here? And you think, you know, has he left the field of play? Because generally... that's what the referee's there for. Sort it, just like a boxing referee would do, the voice, and separate it and get the guys. You know, in games, there's a lot of passion. And these things happen.
Yeah.
But now what will happen is both clubs will be charged by the FA and they'll finish up having to pay a fine for failing to control their players, which is...
Yeah, quite, Quite. Keith, nice to speak to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Keith.
See you soon, Keith Hackett there, former FIFA and Premier League referee, talking about that incident. And we sort of said, you know, the Leeds players, there was a slight hesitation, and that's when the Villa players stopped. But the referee hadn't blown his whistle.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be about when the Leeds player hesitates. It should be about when the referee's whistle goes.
It should be. Yeah.
But and they're all told that a million times, but it doesn't mean...
Example, think back to 1987 FA Cup at your gaff, Watford then. Remember when the free kick wasn't given and I ran at the other end and scored that third goal?
Yes.
Because it was a case of no whistle, play until the whistle.
Just play.
That's what you got to do.
You did that, Luther?
I can't say I was happy with it.
No, but
that's bad sportsmanship.
That's what I'm saying. Bad sportsmanship. You're having a laugh. Hey, the whistle is there for a reason. Yeah. When you hear it, you stop.
Did you let them score one back?
No. Yeah, right.
That's what I was shouting for.
That was never, ever going to happen.
No. No. In fact, you should have been made to score an own goal. Put it in your own net. That's what should have happened. They should have stood you there and your head should have been bowed. All right, then. Hey. All right, then. Go kick it, Luke.
Hey, I'd have missed something.
You would have missed. Yeah, that might be what would happen. Jamie has come in with some other stories.
Yeah, ISIS's leader.
The leader of ISIS.
The leader of ISIS.
Abdul Bakr al-Baghdadi, or to give him his full name, Abdul Bakr al-Baghdadi, ex-Bialidosh. What about him?
Yes. He has appeared for the first time in 5 years. Most people
his
thought...
beard. Sorry? His
he,
beard.
He has appeared.
Oh, he's appeared.
I thought you said he beard, actually.
No,
yeah.
No, sorry. He has appeared with
he's
his beard.
Beard. He's appeared. His beard is in a lesbian relationship.
He's appeared with a dyed beard. Actually.
With a dyed beard?
Yeah, he's dyed his beard brown.
Do we know this? Sorry.
Well, there's a picture of him.
Right.
Basically, so, he's appeared via video link.
Kill all the Westerners and bring me dye number four.
pretty much, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
Not too red.
No. The thing is, he hasn't dyed the whole thing.
How ridiculous. He hasn't dyed his whole beard.
No, he's dyed...
He can only get a certain amount out.
Yeah, he's basically dyed the bottom of it and the rest of it is still grey. So.
Of all the things that ISIS can get hold of. Right. Anyway, so he's dyed his beard.
He's dyed his beard.
Right.
Everyone thought he was dead, but now he's appeared in a video basically saying, praising the Sri Lanka bombers and calling on, radical Muslims throughout the world to attack non-Muslims, basically.
Yeah.
Which is a bit worrying. I mean, Sri Lanka, I was there the other day and it all seemed very peaceful and you thought those years were behind Sri Lanka and then suddenly...
Appalling.
Tragic, yeah.
Appalling. And this guy, you know what? I don't like the idea of targeted killing, right? I genuinely don't, because a lot of people die in these things and they're not particularly the people they want to kill. But this guy doesn't seem like a very positive person.
No, he doesn't.
Worldwide, does he?
No. But
not
that,
particularly.
But that is what a terrorist is all about. It's to put fear in the hearts of everybody. So you're always looking over your shoulder, aren't you? That's the only reason for it.
That's the point, I guess. But he's on a hit list, I imagine. They want to try and get him if they can.
Yeah, they thought they had. But yeah, going to have to try again now, aren't they?
He doesn't appear very often on video. Like I say, first time in 5 years.
Yeah. And yeah. Everyone apparently...
It is hard to get on the telly. I've got to be honest with you. I've had difficulty. I can't do Live at the Apollo, you know. It's very, very difficult.
And he's managed
it. The producers changed, don't they?
He's in a cave and he's managed it.
Abdul Bakr al-Baghdadi's on the telly before me. It's outrageous.
Yeah.
How comes he got a break?
Well, you know what you need to do if you want to get on telly.
I need to grow a beard and start preaching jihad. And then I'll be there.
Pretty much,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
A big new theme park's being built. ITV are on board. This is an ITV theme park. It was going to be run by Paramount London, but then the film giant pulled out in 2017. But yeah, ITV are going to be involved.
Where's it going to be this?
It's going to be Britain's Disneyland, they're calling it.
Really?
In Swanscombe in Kent.
Right.
Not very glamorous.
No, but you know what? If it's amazing, I'm sure the kids will love it.
535-acre park, and it's going to be based around kids' shows like Thunderbirds and RoboZuna. Do you know that?
No, I don't.
Maybe that's a modern one. You know Thunderbirds.
I know, of course. Thunderbirds are go. Yeah, I absolutely love Thunderbirds. Yeah,
I'm not sure if that's still going.
Thunderbirds have stopped. This is actually the theme now. Right? Okay. Yeah. Thunderbirds are no longer go. Right.
So that's going to start 2024, they reckon that'll be ready.
Right.
Britain's.
Britain's Disneyland. Well, I mean, they've got Disneylands in other countries. The thing is, the weather here ain't great, is it? You sort of don't want to go to Disneyland when it's all drizzly and horrible.
Well, it's all right these
days. Which is most of the year.
Which is, yeah, well, that's true these days. But global warming kicking in, it'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Got another good summer coming up, apparently.
Apparently we have.
And a nice bank holiday weekend coming up in early May.
Do you know when the climate protesters were out on the bridges and my mum said, well, at least the weather's nice for them.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, mum, that's sort of the point. That's why they're protesting, really.
Yeah.
Okay, Britain's Disneyland. Well, my kids are grown up now, so when you have kids, though, Jamie, when you finally get it together and sort it out, you can go. They'll be ready then.
Thanks very
and
much.
You can have a day. You can have a day out in Britain's Disneyland, queuing up for overpriced rides.
Can't wait to go to Swanscombe. And also, silly old builder built a bench overlooking the sea in the Isle of Wight, but unfortunately, he built it the wrong way around, so it was just facing the road.
Overlooking the road.
Supposed to be overlooking the sea, but accidentally did it the wrong way. How do you do that?
How do you do that?
How do you manage
it
that?
It is pretty... Should have gotten a Specsavers. That's yeah, an advert, isn't
that
it, really?
Is, yeah.
Oh, well. All right. Well, where is this, by the way?
This is Isle of Wight.
It's the Isle of Wight, and it's facing inwards.
Facing inwards, facing the road. Maybe he thought
well,
that.
Well, maybe it's facing the other side of the island. You've got to have very good eyesight. But you can see over the other side
eventually
of the island.
You see the coast in the distance.
See the coast in the distance. Yeah, yeah, okay. Love Sport. James Bond theme they're playing because the new one is being filmed right now in Jamaica. Is that right, Jamie?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, and there's a story about Daniel Craig in the papers today. Apparently, he's insisted on having his own physio, chef and personal trainer. While he's filming in Jamaica.
You know what? The guy's 51. He looks in absolutely outstanding shape. And I think if he needs that, then he should have it. And these film companies, they make so much money. You know what? The way you said it there, insisted. Like he's put his foot down.
Well, he has.
Well,
the
maybe.
Headline in The Sun is Octafussy.
So what you're saying, they're saying that Daniel Craig has become a diva.
No license to chill, apparently, yeah.
No license to chill, right. You know what, in the end, he's 51. I say it again, he's 51, and what he puts his body through.
And it is quite physical, the sort of stuff that he does.
Unbelievable.
So, yes, you need to have somebody to look after you.
I think so, and I think all the help you can get to do that role is my feeling.
Mm.
No, you're not so convinced.
Well, Jamie. No, only because I'm reading the paper and they're not convinced. Apparently, he has caused quite a few problems on set, a few rows. Well, people think he's been a bit spoiled, a bit of a diva.
Do you know what? I mean, a friend of mine used to share a flat with him, said he was all right.
Just by the way.
So, you know what? In fact, I'm going to go with my mate rather than what the Sun says.
Danny Boyle reportedly quit as director over a spat with him over casting for the film's lead villain. None of the Bond girls in his time were chosen without Craig's say-so.
Right.
Insiders say he's prone to tantrums and has a temper when asserting his views on production.
Is that right? Mm. That's what they say, do they? You know what? Like I say, when you hear this, I've got mates. And I've said this to you last week. I've got mates who are famous and people talk about them in the same way. Yeah. But I don't know. I know people who know them and I know them and they seem like nice people to me. Maybe they misbehave when they're on set and I don't see it. As soon as I'm out of the room, Stoney's gone.
It's a story, isn't it? It's a story, isn't it? Yeah. In a Bond film just started filming, so... Hey, it's a great story.
Yeah, and I guess it gets a bit of publicity. Perhaps it's all about the publicity and it's all made up, Jamie. Have you considered that? That we just happened to talk about the James Bond film on the radio on Tuesday morning?
Well, you're saying you don't believe everything you read in The Sun?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's up to you.
Whereas you take it as verbatim.
I'm very trusting.
You are. You are.
They found out...
This is why you voted Leave. You believe what you saw on the side of a bus.
Good.
Go on.
There's a story about the...
We haven't done that in a while, have we?
But
Brexit. No, Brexit.
Stuff.
No, thank God. Let's leave it at that. What else you got?
Although, as we're talking about that bus,
yeah.
I do have a bone to pick with people that say that it was a promise. That was never a promise on the side of the bus.
Was it not?
It was we should spend this money on the NHS, or let's spend this money. That doesn't mean that every penny we're not giving to the EU is going to be spent on the NHS.
That's how people read it, though.
Idiots might have read it like that. And there were a lot of idiots who voted Leave. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
But they were.
You can't say that, well, Brand. All those people. Oh,
these are your brethren.
The youth of today.
My lot.
Yeah, your lot. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
We found out which city has residents who have the best sleep. Can you guess where they come from?
The best sleep?
Yeah.
Norwich.
Nope, but you're not far off in terms of incest. It's
Ipswich.
Bristol.
Incest.
Well, I can say that because I'm from Bristol. We always, I see. It's always us in Norwich who get accused of that sort of stuff.
Well, I was in Bristol on Saturday night.
Yep.
And I slept well. Got to be honest with you. I did sleep well, but I'd had a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
So that might have helped as well. But I had a really good snooze. You know, because I never usually sleep. I got to Bristol and I suddenly felt relaxed.
Did you?
I hit that bed and I was gone after quite a few bottles of Red Stripe.
Not marijuana or anything. They haven't got that floating around anywhere, have they?
No. None of that going on. No. I've got an England Cricket International coming up.
I just thought it might just be there, you know, in the air. Because you go certain place and you think, what is that?
If ever there is a place where it's in the air, it's Bristol.
There's a fair bit of that going on, but no, not in my case. No. But...
No, I was not accusing you of having any yourself, personal consumption.
I understand that.
Well, Bristolians get 5 hours and 13 minutes of unbroken sleep every night.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
It doesn't, but that's unbroken sleep. So that means you're not waking up in the night.
I understand the concept of unbroken sleep. Thank you. I never knew what that meant before.
Yeah.
Unbroken means not broken, right? Like in a row. Thank you, Jamie. Yeah, thank God you're here.
Yeah, but I thought when I read that, I thought, oh, that's not very long because 8 hours is good. But then I thought, well, you might still be getting 8 hours, but only five of them are unbroken.
Right. How do they know this?
I'm not sure. That's what I was wondering.
sitting with a clipboard in somebody's bedroom. To be honest, I'd wake up if somebody was sat there in my bedroom. What are you doing there? I'm just recording when you wake up. Well, get out of bedroom. You woke me up with your scribbling.
Yeah,
it's
true.
It's a bit weird, Dad. But anyway, 5 hours and 13 minutes as opposed to where?
Well, Londoners get 4 hours and 50 minutes.
Is that traffic noise, is it?
Which is actually quite good as well.
Right.
But it's the worst is Manchester. They only get 4 hours of unbroken kip a night.
Is that right? Mm. It's because they've got endless dance music playing or something. Is that what it is?
the rain on the window.
Right. Okay.
So the rain or raving.
The rain on the window. Right. That's what it is. Yeah. Right. I wake up and okay. It's pouring again.
Could be that. Right. Did you hear about the cow on the M1 yesterday?
Is this another joke? Right. It wasn't moving very quickly. Is this like a test of my comic abilities? What about the cow on the M1? There's a cow wandered onto the M1.
Yeah.
What pain.
Caused 3 miles of jams.
I'm not surprised.
Until police moved it on.
Right.
Always a good laugh when as long as the animal's safe, when the animal gets on the motorway.
Always a good laugh when a cow's on the motorway gets mowed down by a massive truck.
No.
No, not that.
No, I wouldn't, I wouldn't condone that.
It's not funny at all.
No, nothing funny about that.
All right. So, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you know when you're driving down the motorway and you see a sign and it says, I don't know, horses for 13 miles or something, right? And you think, so do the horses know when the 13 miles has come to an end? And they wouldn't possibly, on the 14th mile, veer on. And you'd suddenly drive out and see a horse and go, you're not meant to be here. It said 13 miles, I've travelled 14. What are you doing here?
They stop and turn around when they get to that 14 mile. Yeah.
13 mile mark, they go, oh, that's as far as we can go. No! Get back. That sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Anyway,
yeah.
There was a cow on the M1.
Cow on the
where?
M1. Knots.
Knots.
Yeah.
Right. Just knots.
So you asked.
Okay, well, I did. Anyway.
Sherwood Forest did it.
It could have done, actually, Luther, yeah.
Cows generally don't live in forests, as far as I know.
They live near.
I've seen Robin Hood. There's all sorts of people hiding in the tree.
They were kept captive there.
They were. That's what I've heard, yeah. Okay, so are the cows all right?
Cows all right. Everyone got home safely.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, that's a relief.
This is Love Sport.
I'm delighted to say we're joined by the Leighton Orient captain, Joby McEnough. Morning, Joby.
Morning, chap.
Joby, congratulations,
well
man.
Done. Well done. Have you recovered after the celebrations?
Yeah, just about.
It looked fantastic.
A good couple of days. So, just about recovering now and letting it all sink in. It's been a long season and nice to get it done now.
And did you get nervous the last few weeks as you realised what you might have done, what you might be able to do?
Yeah, honestly, it's been so intense and so tight, you really are just focused on sort of the games as they come. I think the last week was probably the one that there's a few nerves flying about. It's just a weird sort of situation, a little bit of a limbo week because it was pretty much done and it was only really us that was going to throw it away. And I think that kind of came over a little bit in the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, just delighted to get over the line. And, it's a massive, day for the club after everything it's been through in the last few years.
And what did it feel like on the pitch on the last day?
Yeah, brilliant. In terms of the game, as I say, it was a bit of a a weird scenario if they were just, you know, it would have been great to win, but we knew we just had to sort of get a point. So that's always in the back of your mind. And then obviously the scenes and stuff after the game were incredible, you know, to be able to share it with, you know, those fans that have been through so much was brilliant.
Wow, to see them, those people on the pitch.
It is absolutely. So what does it feel like, you know, to be part of the team that has got Leyton Orient back in the Football League? What does that feel like? I mean, what does that, you know, for you as a player and then also for the management and obviously all the supporters of Leyton Orient?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me personally, someone who's been through, you know, some of the real bad times in the last few years at the club, I probably have a greater sort of insight into, you know, how much it does mean, you know, for the club to go out of the league in the first place, you know, for the first time ever. You know, it was a real, real low point in the history of the club. And, you know, I've tried to get that across to some of the lads this year that, you know, getting the team back in is going to be, you know, a real significant milestone in the club's history, really. And I think some of the younger ones don't quite get that yet. I'm sure in years to come, you know, that they will, and the significance of that will become greater. But yeah, certainly for myself, the coaching staff, you know, we know, you know, how important that's going to be, because, you know, we've got great owners now, and I really think that the club's going to push on and, you know, go and achieve great things. So it's all about that first step, really. And, you know, you can't, you know, really belittle the importance of, you know, getting out of the conference and back into the league.
No, and I saw the Leyton Orient feed, the Twitter feed after the relegations and the financial woes, after the fights and battles to save our club, after the rebuild, and the uniting of players and fans are like, we are back, only one Orient. And you get the sense how much it means to the local area and obviously to the players and the fans and the management. There was a bit of fun as well. Did one of the players say something slightly rude about Salford and Gary Neville then retweeted it like you imagine he would?
Yeah, I don't think he'll be getting a move there anytime soon.
I shouldn't think so.
But it's good for us. We want to keep him here. So obviously with their resources, it probably rules them out of ever signing him. So that's all right for us. Yeah, I think it's just one of those moments, you know, you get caught up in the, you know, the fans and, you know,
yeah,
all
it's
the
all right.
excitement and stuff. So he's all right. He'll be fine, yeah.
You know what it is? As a fan, that's exactly what sort of things that fans are saying. I know the authorities might go, no, stop all that. But let me tell you, that endears you more to the fans than anything.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Especially because, obviously, they were one of our, you know, our big, big rivals. And,
of course.
You know, I think they were so close with us, you know, the whole season long. And I suppose it's just that relief again, you know, coming out and that immediate kind of reaction. It's a bit like, you know, when fans players get done for over-celebrating goals, jumping into the crowd. It's ridiculous. It's a real just moment of, you know, euphoria and you do lose a bit of control sometimes. And, you know, it's just one of those things that happen, really.
Quite. And it's almost like you might well have been playing another of your former clubs, Wimbledon, but they had a bit of a great escape, didn't they? I mean, they were 10 points away from safety, and then Wally Downs has got them out. It's an outstanding achievement.
Yeah, he's done absolutely magnificently there. I think just the general progress of that football club, where they've come from, has been, you know, an absolutely incredible story, you know, to come up so quickly. And then, you know, they're always a club, even from my day there, were, you know, fighting against, you know, the big boys and, you know, lack of resources, lack of funds. But, you know, they've been brilliant. And, yeah, obviously.
We hope they make it.
Yes, I really do. Yeah, yeah, it'd be great if they could stay up, yeah.
Joby, again, many congratulations. A fantastic season. Well done.
Thank you very much, guys.
Nice to speak to you, Joby McEnough there. Leyton Orient captain. Fabulous scenes.
It is.
Down there.
It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm really pleased about it, because Leyton Orient was the first football ground, professional football ground, I ever played on.
Is that right? Brisbane Road.
I played there in, I think it was the SE Thai Cup final. I played and I scored twice there, actually, in that ground. So that has got good memories for me. I'm really pleased that they're back.
And when you think about the fact that they're basically, I think the ground is less than a mile from the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah.
And how tough that is that suddenly West Ham got a 55,000 seat stadium. And I know that Barry Hearn was basically saying how hard that would be for the club if they another couple of thousand fans from the local area end up going to the Olympic Stadium rather than going to see the O's.
Yeah, but I don't think that's really happened, is it?
No. Listen, people are, if they're Orient fans, they're staying and watching the game.
They stay that way, yeah.
But these clubs operate on a bit of a knife edge, don't they?
They do. I mean, the thing is, results are so important to any club. But the further you go down the leagues, the more important it is, because, you know, the fact that you're flirting with falling out of the league, that could be really catastrophic for everybody. And usually it's the office staff and all the people that work behind the scenes that really suffer.
Well, yeah, although the National League teams are almost all pro now, aren't
they? Yeah, I mean, they're a lot. I mean, all they are now, that they are taken over from what the fourth division used to be now, really, haven't they? The National League.
Yeah, I mean, people say, and I haven't seen a lot of it, I'll be honest with you, but people say there isn't a huge amount of difference. When you see how well Lincoln have done, out of the National League.
Lincoln have been incredible, haven't they?
Yeah, and look, they've won the title again this season. They have won the title down there in League Two, I believe.
Yeah.
And you see how good they've been, and they came up from the National League, didn't they, a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, so, no, they're very good. I mean, now, in those lower divisions, there is very little between the teams. And that little bit more finance used in the right way, you can find yourself promotion and find yourself getting closer and closer to the big time.
Yeah, well, I mean, at Arsenal a couple of seasons ago, we had Lincoln and we had Sutton United in the FA Cup, and they both gave us a proper game.
Yeah,
you know, and that's as it should be. And you think, yeah, there's some serious quality down there.
Yeah, that's what it used to be. And you know, when you get the chance, as this one of the smaller clubs, to play third round of the FA Cup and you're facing the likes of an Arsenal or a Liverpool or whatever, it's what you dream of as a professional footballer.
This is Love Sport.
I mean, there is still a chance for Bristol City. I think Swansea are a good side. We saw them play against Manchester City earlier this season in the FA Cup and they played beautifully. Second goal they scored was an absolute cracker. But as soon as City were lucky there. They got offside goals in that game.
Yeah.
But as soon as City got one back, you felt they were going to win. But Swansea can play.
Derby
have got to go to Swansea. That's a hard game
for
them.
That is a tough, tough game for them. At this stage of the season, where there's so much riding on it, and this is why the playoff system, I think, which is not something that I particularly liked at the beginning, but it has sort of really grown on me now. And I think it just keeps the season going to the final day of the finals. I just think it's brilliant, and for the championship as well, because the championship playoff, the single most expensive game that you could, you know,
yeah,
valuable game.
It's huge.
Ever.
It is huge. Jamie is our producer and a Bristol City fan, and he's been feeling a bit down about the whole thing. He said they need Rotherham to get a result against Middlesbrough. Rotherham were already relegated, but that actually could act in their favour, actually, because Rotherham will be playing with the freedom that they perhaps, this is how football fans would rationalise this. Oh, Rotherham, of course they get a result. Middlesbrough under pressure. Rotherham, just go out there. Just play their football. And it doesn't
happen. Do a Fulham.
Look at Jamie, I'm talking to you. Look at Fulham since then. I mean, everyone thought Cardiff would go to Fulham. That's their easy game. But no. Because Fulham, since they've been relegated, they've been playing outstanding football.
They've remembered what it was like to play in the Championship, because they are back in the Championship.
Yes, that's right. Although Rotherham don't have players of the class of Ryan Babel, there's no doubt about that. Derby need to pick up 2 points or less against Swansea and West Brom. And Bristol City, by the way, need to win their last game against, who is it, by the way?
We've got Millwall tonight and then Hull.
And then Hull.
Away on the final day.
Which is a gimme.
Yeah, you'll beat Hull.
So give
we'll
me any Hull. Anyone can go to Hull and get 3 points. So
I'll be at the Den tonight.
You will. You're going down there.
Yeah, I'll be there
as an away fan.
Yeah.
So we could have a new producer tomorrow.
Straight from the train. Look straight ahead and walk through.
Because you have just told them you're coming.
Yeah, I was going to say that told them you're coming. And they go, you from round here, mate? Oh yeah. Of course I'm from round here. Then they'll know, mate. I'm from Southeast London.
All right, lads. How's it going? All right.
That's all right. Yeah, all right, mate. How are you?
Right.
Cool, lovely. Cool, blimey. Love the Queen Mum.
Bermsey boy, ain't I?
Oh, yeah. You're there, mate. Yeah, you're there. You absolutely never know.
There is a story in the paper. The Court of Arbitration for Sport will come up with a decision tomorrow over the Caster Semenya gender argument.
Yes.
So the IAAF argue that DSD athletes, so that's athletes with differences of sexual development, should have to take testosterone suppressants if they want to compete with other women.
Yeah.
Caster Semenya and her lawyers argue that she was born that way and therefore she should be able to compete against other women
without having to take these suppressants. But what they're suggesting now is if the IAAF win their case, then there
and
might...
And she has to take suppressants if they win their case.
Yeah, if they win their case, she has to take suppressants. Well, that would be the case. She'll have to. But if they lose the case and she wins, then we might have a situation where you have two groups, sort of like an A group and a B group. And in one group, you have athletes who are DSD, such as Semenya.
Yeah.
And another group, you have women who don't have that.
Right. So, and they would race separately.
So
they're going to discriminate against all of them.
Well, basically, yeah, because, I mean, that was what I thought was central to Semenya's case. She is a woman, so if she were to win, then she would just be put in normally with women who don't have to take suppressants or don't have differences of extra testosterone.
But if the IAAF win, there will be three different events in the 800 metres, the men's, the women's, and the DSD, the different sexual development race.
Yes, basically. Well, this is a senior athletics insider suggested the sport may have to contemplate replacing male and female categories with A and B classifications.
Oh my God! You know what? So I can argue this both ways.
I see what that means. I see what they're saying actually. So it would still be effectively male and female,
as it were. Really, Lufa. Really? You're a grown-up. Will you stop it?
I'm saying nothing.
I know you are. I mean, you're saying everything as well. Sorry, James.
Sorry, no, I might have got that wrong. Rather than there being three different groups, you would just have an A and B rather than saying male and female. So therefore, you would have Caster Semenya running against other women who don't have to take any suppressants.
Well, what does that mean then?
But it would just be
who
called,
wins the race?
It would be called B. It would be called a B group rather than female.
Right.
So you'd have A and B. So
I see.
That would be the two groups rather than men and female. So then you have all trans athletes and athletes who have extra testosterone racing with women.
But you're not saying you're not going to call one race women because then that discriminates against the others.
Exactly.
This is all very complicated, isn't it? And like I say, I feel, on the one hand, I feel sorry for Caster Semenya because you know what? She was born a girl and she's grown up a woman and lives as a woman and is a woman. On the other hand, it doesn't seem fair on the other female athletes who don't have these high levels of testosterone.
Yeah.
Does it?
No, it doesn't. So the condition can mean they lack uterus and ovaries but have internal testes, and that's why they have extra testosterone. And women such as Sharon Davis have said, well, that makes it an unfair playing field.
Although which is a perfectly valid viewpoint. And Paula Radcliffe has been saying this as
that's
well.
That's right.
And Sharon Davis, and I think Paula Radcliffe, but certainly Sharon Davis, have been personally affected by racing against women who have had high levels of testosterone, whether natural or you know,
otherwise
injected in, basically.
Yeah, it's a very...
It's a minefield.
It is, yeah. It's a difficult topic, but they come up with it.
How can you possibly come up with a judgment? But I mean, how can you possibly make a judgment?
That's a fair one.
Yes, somebody's going to lose
there's
out.
There's no such thing as a fair one in all of this.
And I find, and I actually, I mean, like I say, I understand why Sharon Davis and Paula Radcliffe are saying this because they might have been personally affected. But I don't see how you can really make strong arguments about this either way. I mean, because the other viewpoint seems just as valid to me.
Yeah, no, it does. It's a really difficult one. So if the IAAF's rule proposal is taken into account, if they basically win, then for 6 months prior to competition, women who have this extra testosterone would have to take suppressants for that 6 months. But the World Championships, which happen in September, wouldn't give them enough time.
Well,
no, they can. What they're going to do is say that if that's the case, then you have to take suppressants from a week after the hearing. And so they're going to allow athletes to compete. If the IAAF win tomorrow, then the athletes will have to start taking their suppressants straight away, and that give them enough time to compete in September.
I know this is a radical. As we're discussing this, wouldn't it be an idea for an athlete like Caster Semenya, whose times are essentially a couple of seconds quicker than everybody else, right, on average, for her to start further back, basically stagger races?
Yeah, but then
I know you can say, well, that's not fair, but it isn't. Do you understand the point I'm making?
Almost like a handicap race.
But then why wouldn't, as you've always said, Jamie, and I understand it, why wouldn't you start with Usain Bolt 5 yards further back than everyone else? Because his natural abilities, and they are natural abilities, just means that he's just faster than everyone else. I don't know. I absolutely do not know what the answer is to this.
No. Well, we're going to get an answer tomorrow. Whether it's, well, that won't be the right answer, but it will
be an answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.